accession number 18490, reel 4.
Ken Smith, reel 4.
We approached this matter, and the Germans had vacated it the day before. They'd gone to get their batteries charged in Camacho town. They didn't know we were there, so that night we dug in. Well, around this mud hut, we dug trench on each corner. And we weren't long into digging our hole when there were some challenges going on. And it turned out that the Germans thought we were Italians, they spoke in their form of Italian to us. We thought they were Italians. And this German officer in the boat said, he said, "Who the bloody hell are you?" And with that, the guns was going off. Oh, mate, with his brain, he got a dead fire and the boat's overturned, and there was they swam for a bank, which would be about 10 yards away. There was a narrow bank in the dark. You see the silhouette of this mud bank. They dived, they went over there. I still stayed in my little slit trench, not knowing what was going on. Then the officer called Corporal Smith. He said, "Go over there." With that, I could see the silhouettes of them stood up, Antioch, they surrender. We got this like a gondola boat, Jock, Sergeant and me, paddled over there. Had their hands in the air, and one of them was, we weren't sure, one was missing. We weren't sure if it was a patrol missing or one man. It turned out it was only one chap. He was killed slightly. He was in half in the water, half out. But in the dark, we couldn't see this. Jock says, "One, Einstein, Stoi," and they all called out, "All right, Hans Kaputin." And there was no response. And he did this twice. And I find it comical now, up beyond the lawns in German territory, and we got this patrol there, all with their hands in the air. And I went along and took all their pay books and whatnots for intelligence. Went over. We got called back over. We took them back over. Then we had to make a landing on the North Shore. So our officer, Dane, Andy Lassen, he briefed us. He spoke dodgy English. He briefed us. We were to land in three parties on the North Shore. Oh, we had a brigadier come up. That was it. A brigadier come through the lawn, and he wanted Lassen. But Lassen was up the next billet. And he wouldn't go up, this brigadier wouldn't go up. So my mate had to go up, all sticks. So he paddled, brought Lassen back. And this brigadier, he said, "I want you to spread your chaps out tonight, right along the front, get ashore, and make as much commotion to give the impression of a big landing." And Lassen kept interrupting him. Oh, I couldn't believe it. There was only less than 20 of us there. He says in broken English, he says, "But I can capture Camacho." And I couldn't believe it. Camacho, we could see it from the distance. And that first morning after we took the prisoners, they welcomed us. They blew our roof off with 88 millimeter. They knew we'd took and taken the place, so we got woke with the roof caving in on us. And Lassen says, "I can take Camacho." This officer says, the brigadier says, "I don't want you. Spread your chaps out." And so lucky enough, we spread it. When it directly got dark, we lined up in our canoes and made for the shore. But the coastline being rather erratic, in the dark, he was way to the right, Lassen. He met land before us. He managed to get ashore, and the dogs gave us away. And the next thought, all the chandeliers, we were lit up at sea. I was 100 yards offshore, still gliding in, paddling. And there was machine gun fire. And, we had to... I turned turtle. And all we could do was swim back to our mud flat. And they come in ones and twos. And someone said Latins at it, just casual like that. And that's how it was treated them days. Croaches at it. Anyhow, after that, I remember this, it was my 23rd birthday. 12th of April. We'd formed on this Lake Camacho. It was very shallow, and they wanted a channel for these salt boats to weave their way up the lake to get beyond the lawns. So we used to get out night after night, finding where it was deep enough for an assault boat, and the secret weapon, fantails they called them, that was sort of tanks that went through water, but at the time it was top secret. I remember seeing them covered over with canvas in the front lawn, and we weren't told that's what they were. And so we used to get out, find this channel, and on this particular night of the big push, off we went, six canoes. Over the top we went. I was in the front canoe with Captain Primrose. We went out so far to our marker, we dropped one canoe, and he would flash back to the where I'd taken off point. Then we'd go off on a bearing, drop another canoe, and we followed this channel round till we actually, I landed with the officer on the north shore of the lake. And then I would flash out to that canoe, he would flash on to another canoe, and then come... And I was going like this, di-da-da-dit. I've done it so many times that night, never forget it. Di-da-da-dit, di-da-da-dit. And he would flash onto another canoe. I had a compass there on this compass bearing where he was. And we'd relieve each other, the officer and me, and we'd dive into our canoe. We had a smoke. We had used to a thing very much like a Vic nose inhaler. You could put a cigarette in and suck on it and it would light. And we'd relieve and we'd get up in the canoe and the next he'd pull my feet, come on, you have a go, and we'd relieve. And then right through the night we flashed till it was getting dawn. We could hear these tanks coming up, but at the same time there was massive bombing raids over the current, the bombers going over. Then come dawn, it was dawn. And there was, by then, our troops was just a couple of 100 yards off coming into where I was flashing. And the firing opened up. They was firing over our head. Jerry's over the top of us. I could hear them going through the night. They were singing, they were, because it was all horse-drawn vehicles then. They had no fuel. And they were going along the road singing till the barrage opened up. And this officer said to me, he said, they've allowed 300 or 400 yards around us, but he could have fooled me. I thought they was trying to hit us. And this barrage, a colossal barrage, went on all round us. You could hear the squeals. There was thousands of horses killed nearby. Where are they, all these? And this officer said to me, he said, we were laid in, just keeping our noses above the water. He said, what do you reckon we ought to do then? I said, I reckon we're better off where we are, because our chaps, they would have shot at us, thinking we were Jerry's, because they don't know, the chaps in the boat don't know, there are chaps on the shore. And the Jerry's overhead, seeing us move, hey, would have had a go at us. So we stayed there a while, and it got so hot, he said, sod this, jump in. So I jumped in this canoe. And I paddled like bloody hell. And he was at the back, and I could see little mortar bombs coming each side of us where someone, and he's zimming of machine gun fire, and he was doing the hard to starboard, hard to port, and I was like the engine room. Eventually we got out of range, and when I got, it was hours before I could get out that canoe, I remember it for another reason, because when I got out the canoe and went back to our tents, sergeant said, "Congratulations, Smithy, you got your wings." There was wings over the medals. See, we'd done parachuting, you get them on the arm. But you had to do 3 successful operations to get them over your medals. And that was all we wanted. Didn't matter about MMs or anything like that. They were 2 a penny. But we wanted our wings. And he said, I said to this officer, while we was in this shore, I said, "I'm 23 today, sir." He said, "Oh, happy birthday." I often look back on that comical, and there's us, our blokes, far and that. Now, from there, we... the Germans surrendered. Now, I've got a picture here somewhere of where I was sat on the side of the road in all the carnage with these hundreds of prisoners going by, hundreds of them, and we'd heard the war was over. Then we got sent down South Italy where the Lebanese stevedores was on strike. And we had a storm of barracks. And I suppose that was the end of the war there.
We stormed whose barracks?
It was an army barracks, which the Lebanese used to unload the ships. And they were promised they'd be sent home when war had ended. And they expected to go home the same day. And so I remember they issued us, we took away our smugglers and gave us rifles and bayonets. And we just stormed this barracks and... And then...
Where was that?
Down in South Italy somewhere, down near Bari Foggia or somewhere. But
were these Lebanese armed?
No, it turned out we didn't know that. We were just told storm and take that barracks. And we were young, mad kids at the time. We'd do anything we were told. Directly the war ended, the Marines wanted back every Marine they could get their hands on because chaps had to be released immediately, the number one age group. So we got called back to Naples. But our officers wanted to go straight out to the Far East to carry on the work out there. I didn't want to go back to the Marines. It was too much flannel for me. I enjoyed this. That's the way of life. It was a rough, hard, but there's no flannel, no bull about it. And he tried to keep us, 12 of us, those with the wings over our medals. I suppose we were the most experienced. But within a couple of days, we had another message from Naples' senior officer. He wanted every Marine back. And so with that, we got called back to the Marines, come back. Sent straight back to England. Sent in, I was PTO for a while. PTO used to take commandos over the assault course, and I finished up Chippen. I wanted to get back to my old trade, and I got sent out to China in 3 commando brigade. From there, used to round up the Japanese and took them on trial, take them over Stanley Prison. And they should have been hung, but they were shot. And so that was but in between that lot, there was lots of little things that I forgot. I only remembered as I went on.
Now, I'd like to go over some things that you've been telling me about to clarify. And going back to when you were recruited in autumn 1943, when you had that interview with Lord Jellicoe, they wouldn't have told you at the time, but were you joining the SBS or the SAS?
Look, it was just another secret service unit. It was, to me, a relief to get off the ship, because after my first ship being torpedoed and then the Penelope, it was the amount of sea time I was missing football. And I was looking for any opportunity to get ashore to play football, have a game of football. And I volunteered for air gunners. There was a shortage of air gunners. They wouldn't accept me. I volunteered for several things, but there was a shortage of gunnery rates, and I was on the 4-inch. I was captain of the 4-inch gun. And... they just wouldn't release me. But this seemed something special. This come from the top brass in Alex, Release immediately.
You didn't know at the time, but you've learned subsequently.
Yes.
Were you in the SAS or the SBS?
It was the first... When, after we'd been in a few days and we had to address our envelopes, we made inquiries and they just said, you are the first SAS, the first SBS. And that didn't mean nothing to us because it was just our address, that's all. But it didn't mean a thing to us at the time. It was only in later years, I can't help laugh, because when I first joined it, there weren't many. We had a few tents. They only had a couple of lorries, about one jeep, I think it was. And that was about all. And now, when I've been back to Hereford, and I see how the unit snowballed, it's really amazed me.
And you told me how you had this journey across the desert from... Because where was your interview? In Alexandria?
In Alexandria.
So you were travelling from Egypt to Palestine across the desert?
Yes.
By lorry?
No, by train. We went from Alexandria to Cairo, and from Cairo we took a train up to Haifa. And from Haifa, we went by lorry 8 to about 17 miles north of Haifa to a little place, Nathania, I think it was.
And you told me how you got rid of your Royal Marine uniforms.
Yes,
on the way.
We threw them out. They were all like cattle trucks, really, just open carriages, no windows. And we were told that there would only be, I think he said, one lorry to take the lot of us, and it was about getting on for 30 of us. And all our excess baggage, because Marines, we had sea kit and army kit. We had a lot of baggage. And we were told to all the lot had to be thrown out. And we arrived in the other end with was our just little personal toothbrush, etc. Because when we got into Haifa at night, it was dark. Sure enough, there was just this one lorry and 1,500 weight to take us off. And no way it would have took a lorry alone just for our baggage. So all the baggage was flung out, all our uniforms. And it was comical to see the little Arab kids as we went through these villages donning these Marine pith helmets, peak caps, Marines uniform.
What did you think of the quality of training that you got in Palestine and the Lebanon?
Well, we found it pretty stiff. In my case, it was just sheer determination to do it what at all costs, because the alternative would have been to go back to the ships. And I think I was reasonably fit, and I coped with it just a bit.
And then you told me that your first operation with the SAS was on Simi. The attack on Simi.
Yes, I think that was the first. We landed. There were three patrols. One landed on the, to my memory, on the west of Simi. One landed to the north, and we landed in about the, to my memory, about the northeast, with 2 MLs. I think there was an ML went to the south. And they eventually, after dropping us all at our various dropping points around the island, this would be about midnight, I suppose, they assembled up where we were, just out in the dark. And we got ashore, and I spent 2 trips clambering up this steep incline, carrying 3-inch mortar bombs to the Greek Sacred Heart Squadron that had the mortars. And they took a high point overlooking the Seamy Town. And we took these up. Since then, my son's been out there, and he marvelled. He's seen this slope. He's marvelled how we done it. He said they put steps up there now, but we clambered up the rocks, up 3-inch mortars, come down, took another load up, and we were just about ready by dawn. The first sign of the attack was the first mortar bomb to be fired, which they were a good shot. The first shot hit this monastery where the Italians and Germans were in. And there was a little bit of, according to intelligence, there was a convoy in the harbour at the time, and there were two German M boats, like, what would they be, like destroyers? And
E-boats, probably.
Bigger than E-boats. We watched them from our height. We could see them leaving the harbour, and they rounded the point, and the convoy, a small convoy, rounded. They disappeared. And it coincided. Oh, plan A was the mortar bomb would go at 5 or 6. But because this convoy was late leaving, we had to go to plan B, which was an hour later, dead on the hour. My job was to quieten this big gun that was the opposite side of this stretch of water. And with Ken Johnson, I couldn't see it, he couldn't see it. It was so well camouflaged. But they gave themselves away because a stroke of luck, it must have been about a minute before the first mortar bomb went off. They all got up from the gun, I suppose about 10 of them, and they did their exercises, you know, when you've been cooped up all night. We could see the movements of the stretching. And a sergeant dishing out orders, pointing, you go this way. And then they followed each other down to the house, which was on the water's edge. And they just about got inside the back of this house when the first mortar bomb went. And immediately they heard that, they come running out of this house up to the gun. And Ken had the gun, I was loading him. And I was a corporal at the time, and I said, keep on. He fired, but there was a breeze up the harbour, and you could see our shot was like a curvature in it. And he fired at them, and he was slightly to the right of them, and so they was run away from the shot, and they sort of ran in a circle straight back into the ice. But I loaded him as fast as I could, and we was unloading these Bren pans into the house, into the windows, just to keep them in the house. And this one chap on the gun, at the back of this gun was a small cemetery, and our plan was the jocks who'd landed on the other side of the island was to take this gun, and they were to wave a red flag, but they'd lost the red flag, and so they produced something white, and I could see this white bin, which was the usual surrender sign. I said, take no notice of that. I said, keep firing far into that cemetery, which was our own chaps, because it wasn't the red flag. And we had to move down onto the town. And while we were moving down the side of this mountain to get down into the town, one of the chaps had lost his, we'd mislaid the some Bren magazines. And I was with the officer, and he said, go back, Smithy, and see if you can find where these magazines have got to. As I ran out from this rock, there was a burst of, I should think it was 50 millimetre, come out at me, and I dived to the ground. It was right alongside me, and I dived, and I put my head up against this rock, and the firings would have come right over to the rock, and I could feel the vibrations on this rock on my head. And our officer and the sergeant who was there, they thought I'd had it. And they shouted, you all right, Smithy? I said, yeah, I'm all right all the time. I'm here. And old Jim Horsfield, he said, I think I see where it's coming from. He said, when I open up, he said, you dive over here. So I did just that. When he opened up, I dived over. And from there, we gradually made our way down into the town. And by then, our other patrols had sort of started rounding up these. But the monastery or the fort wouldn't give in. They wouldn't surrender. So one of our officers, he spoke several languages, He took one of the prisoners, and with a white flag, they approached this fort and to tell them that the place was surrounded, which it wasn't really, because there was only three patrols of us, and we were scattered all over the island. But they weren't to know that. And they had to communicate with Rhodes, I believe it was Rhodes, on the phone to the German commander, and he wouldn't let them surrender. He said, no, I'll get reinforcements over. And with that, we rounded up all the loose prisoners. There was lots of them, quite a few, as a matter of fact. And I remember one of them, he'd been hit in the face with a stick grenade, with one of the Italian Red Devil grenades. He had all his jaw blown away, and he'd gone round the twist a bit, and he was running around shaking hands with everyone. It wasn't a pretty sight to see if he's. We just let him wander, drift about. From there, I went on. While I was up higher, I saw when we started firing, these two German boats came back. They heard the firing, and they came back into this harbour. They could see us far, and they opened up on us. But lucky for us, these five MLs, or MTBs, had assembled, and it was the loveliest little naval action I'd ever seen. From our height, we could look down onto the lovely sea, clear water. I could see our five MLs coming in a clockwise elliptical circle, I suppose about a half a mile or a quarter of a mile going around, and they were firing broadsides as they got opposite these two German M boats. They fired, and gradually the Germans stopped their firing at us, and the one drifted off over away, and the other one come underneath us, head of our sight for a while. And the next time, though, is when we managed to get down into the town, it was tied up alongside. And it had quietened down by then. So I went aboard one of them. I went aboard this M boat. It was quite quiet. I assumed everyone was off the boat. Prisoners, they would lined up. I would see seamen on the jetty. And look.